The summer of 2017, 50 years on from 1967 and the so-called Summer of Love that bloomed in San Francisco.
Strobe lights beam, creates dreams. Walls move, minds do too. On a warm San Franciscan night.
This weekend, I'm hosting an hour-long special on the BBC World Service, looking back at that wild, revolutionary moment in the cultural and political life of America, and really the world. I met some fascinating people in San Francisco making this radio documentary for the BBC, and I want to share with you some of what they told me, because when you look around America and the world in 2017, it's hard not to think back about what a small community did to challenge the establishment 50 years ago. At the Haight-Ashbury annual street fair last month, I met a man who was thinking about all this. His name is Helger, and he was born in 1967. Helger's German, and he and his wife moved to the Bay Area for work about a decade ago. They loved it, and they stayed. I asked him whether the hype around the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love is nostalgia or something else.
I mean, you know who the president is of the United States, and what we're seeing around the world, whether it's in Turkey or in other countries, that we see a movement of the democracy being abolished in some of the countries. And so I think it's important for us to go out again and connect to people in real life and try also to have a conversation. I mean, maybe we're a good example. We live here, and now we have friends from all over the world. So I think that's kind of the idea of what the kids tried here.
The real Summer of Love was not the summer of 1967, because they spent the year 1966 in a creative ferment in the Haight.
That's Dennis McNally, former publicist for the Grateful Dead and a historian of the Summer of Love. The Haight is Haight-Ashbury, that San Francisco neighborhood where, as McNally says, the cultural life of America was fermenting.
They experimented with psychedelics, with consciousness, with sexuality, with music, with all kinds of things.
The ones doing the experimenting, an eclectic mix of artists and writers from Jerry Garcia and Gray Slick to Allen Ginsberg and Ken Kesey, folkies and jazz cats, actors and dancers, local business owners in the Haight, college kids and high school dropouts, and people who just wanted to be part of the scene.
And they had such a good time that at the end they said, let's throw a party.
The Haight-Ashbury community has created the Council for a Summer of Love in San Francisco.
We call upon the world to help us celebrate the infinite...
A party that would last, in theory, for 3 months.
The council is calling for creative love happenings for every weekend throughout the summer.
The word spread fast. School was out, and the idea of being part of something exciting, radical, and fun drew as many as 100,000 people to the streets of Haight-Ashbury that summer. Haight Street was constantly packed. Joel Selvin is a writer and former rock critic for the San Francisco Chronicle.
San Francisco was this glorious beacon of a new life, and it echoed throughout the world.
South African trumpeter Hugh Masekela had fled the apartheid regime back home and became part of the LA music scene. In June of 67, Masekela played the Monterey Pop Festival. Before he had his big 1968 hit, Grazin' in the Grass, he was grazin' in something else.
When you walk down the Haight-Ashbury at any time, you know, it was difficult to find somebody who wasn't floating.
When you say everybody was floating in the Haight, what do you mean?
They were high. Everybody was high.
Were you high?
Of course.
Did you try LSD in California?
I didn't try it, I took it. I took it regularly. Very few people were not tripping.
Just imagine the freedom the Haight impressed on a young black artist from South Africa at the time. And remember what else was going on in the world. It was the Cold War, Vietnam was at full tilt, the civil rights movement had gripped America. If you want a clear sense of the mood in the country and the world back in 1967, listen to Harry Strouch. His family had emigrated to the Bay Area from Vienna, and he ended up in the Haight opening what was probably the first head shop in the U.S. in gear. But in between, he made a stop at Harvard, where he saw the schisms in America on full display.
I went to Harvard University, where Henry Kissinger and Timothy Leary were teaching, both at the same time in the same building where I was the philosophy librarian. And that was in Emerson Hall. And at each end of the building, there were two lecture halls. And sometimes I would go down to one, and there was Kissinger talking about Realpolitik, and it was all loaded with these young future senator types. And then at the other end of the hall was Leary talking to the psychology graduate students, and they were all taking mushrooms with the prisoners in the state's prison system.
Yeah, kind of mind-blowing, but that image neatly sums up the 60s. There are so many legacies of the Summer of Love, but we've got to single out the music. 1967 was already a prolific musical year, and then the San Francisco sound caught fire. Here's one more excerpt from the documentary. It's writer Joel Selvin again with a great story about how Paul McCartney had to see the scene for himself.
He flew in from Los Angeles where he was doing some business, borrowed Frank Sinatra's Learjet, and spent the day and flew out without staying the night. He just wanted to come see San Francisco. He had a copy of Sgt. Pepper's, and it was a test pressing. And he walked in unannounced to a rehearsal by the Jefferson Airplane. Can you imagine that? Like, you're in 1967, and you're playing with your little band in San Francisco, and in your rehearsal, "Hello, fellas," comes Paul McCartney. Well, they knew what to do. They took him over to the Airplane Mansion and dosed him with DMT, which was a very cool designer psychedelic that was short term. It was like the trip was like an hour. Intense, you know. They called it working man's acid. And they sat around, and when everybody like came back to Earth, they listened to the test pressing, and you know, they didn't jam or anything, but you know. He wanted to see San Francisco. He wanted to see Jefferson Airplane. He'd heard about it. He'd made this record that sort of was an imagining of it. This was something happening, what, 8,000 miles away that he'd just heard about. It was a rumor.
C'est une maison bleue.
But it wasn't a rumor, it wasn't a dream, it was real. So real that musicians all over the world continued to fall under the spell of San Francisco for years to come.
Quand San Francisco s'embrume, quand San Francisco s'allume, San Francisco.
A big shout out to producer Ruth Evans for making me a part of this documentary. You can hear the entire hour if you're going to San Francisco on the BBC World Service this weekend. And let me tell you how to listen. An app, one that you must download now because it's so darn cool, the BBC iPlayer. You can listen live to the World Service or any of the BBC's radio stations, not to mention the world's weekly sister program on the Beeb, Boston Calling. Yeah, Boston, you got yourself 43 million listeners every weekend. Just look for the BBC's pink iPlayer app wherever you download your apps. You'll be glad you did. We come to you from the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH in Boston. Our theme music was composed by Eric Goldberg. We'll see you all back here on Monday.
San Francisco se lève. San Francisco se lève. San Francisco. Où êtes-vous, Lise des Lucs, Sylvia, attendez-moi. C'est une maison bleue, accrochée à ma mémoire. On y vient à pied, on ne frappe pas ceux qui vivent.